fifth case, the United States versus Meese. Meese. Mr. Jones.
May it please the court. My name is Bill Jones from Madison, Wisconsin. I represent the defendant appellant, Adam Meese, in this case. This appeal visits, just from my impression, at least where I practice, is a growing trend by law enforcement to enlist the use of a probation agent to invade the privacy of probationers where probable cause doesn't exist. And I think the testimony that was presented in the evidentiary hearing in this case really irrefutably demonstrates that Mr. Meese was arrested based upon an anonymous tip. And the issue here really is, well, how credible does that evidence have to be? I can appreciate that a probationer has a lowered expectation of privacy, and therefore reasonable suspicion is only necessary and not probable cause. However, I don't find any case law that says that the credibility of the evidence that's being relied upon need be any less reliable. And when asked at the evidentiary hearing, you know, why was this anonymous tip deemed credible, the officer indicated questions that she asked but provided no details to what was told to her. And so we have no record as to determine why was this anonymous tip deemed reliable in determining whether there was reasonable suspicion. And then what I perceive as the order adopting the report and recommendation is a second layer of vagueness in that Judge Crabb indicated that, well, yeah, you know, it would have been better if the government had asked certain questions and gotten exact answers to those questions. But, I think she says, nevertheless, her testimony about what she had done and the steps she had followed was sufficient, if barely so, to show that she had reasonable suspicion to believe that the defendant had engaged in criminal conduct. So I see this as vagueness upon vagueness, without any real record as to, well, you know, wait a minute, there is a level of expectation of privacy and a Fourth Amendment right in a probationer. I understand that it's lowered, but there has to be some basis. And accepting the logic or the argument that...
Could the probation officer have entered the home under the terms of the probation regardless of any warrant?
I don't believe so. I don't think that they have a right to just show up and enter the home without reasonable suspicion. I think that is the basis. And all that the probationer knew was...
Not a warrant, just a reasonable suspicion.
Correct. You know, that's a term that's interesting. It's been used throughout this case. I don't know that... My impression of a warrant is one in where you go and get a warrant from a judge. This is a hold, I suppose, or an interest by a probation agent. And there is a level of certainty as to improper behavior that has to be raised before those privacy interests can really be encroached upon. And so I think that under the circumstances in this case, there's no record to support that this anonymous tip was credible, reliable, and that it should be deemed sufficient just because we have a reasonable suspicion analysis and not a probable cause analysis. And then we move on to the next issue, which is the taint. And I think that the reliance on Mr. Meese's live-in girlfriend and mother of his children, her testimony about, well, hey, you know, Adam's been in trouble before, and therefore, you know, I don't really, I'm not too concerned about that, was totally misconstrued. She was being asked, you know, look, you're the mother of his children, right? And I think the question was to the effect of, well, doesn't that give you a strong motivation to come here and lie at the evidentiary hearing? And she said, look, I'm not going to, I mean, basically what she's saying is, look, I'm not going to come here and perjure myself for Adam. He's been in trouble before. I can raise my kids on my own. She was not saying that the fact that that Adam was arrested did not enter my mind or did not affect my decision to give consent to search our house. And the third point that this appeal raises is the four-point enhancer. Adam Meese possessed two firearms as a felon and therefore, you know, violated the law. But these two guns were found underneath a mattress in a second-floor bedroom, one of which had the wrong type of bullets in them, the other one unloaded. And, yes, indicia of drug use was found down in the kitchen on the first floor, torn off baggies of, baggies, which certainly laced with, cocaine, and money found in the basement. And the problem I'm having with the four-point enhancer is kind of similar to the vehicle search that, was recently addressed in Gantt. It's just growing too far. It's growing too far. This is an enhancer for people who possess a gun as a felon and then use it in connection with a felony. And then the guideline says, well, no one has to actually see them use it to in connection with a felony. You can kind of presume that if it's in close proximity. Well, fine. I can understand if you open up a cabinet and there's a plate of crack cocaine drying there and there's a gun sitting next to it or in a drawer down below beneath or maybe in the same room, that's in close proximity. But here the evidence is a gun in a second floor bedroom underneath a bed. Indicia of drug use, unknown at when that, whether those two were even coexistent in time in a first floor kitchen, and then there's money found in a basement. I think it's becoming too far stretched. There is not a sufficient amount of evidence to impose that four-point enhancer under 2K2.1B6. Under the guidelines. So I have nothing further to say, and I'll yield the rest of my time.
Thank you, Mr. Jones. Ms. Rumbelow?
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, Rita Rumbelow for the United States Attorney's Office in Madison, Wisconsin. I did represent the government below. On April 17, 2008, the Madison Police Department received a very specific anonymous call. The law enforcement officer corroborated as many details as possible, one of those being that Adam Meese was on probation. This is a 19-year veteran of the Madison Police Department. That officer then relayed the information that she received to Mr. Meese's probation officer. Only the probation officer could decide whether or not he or she felt, with supervisory approval, there was reasonable suspicion to issue an arrest warrant or a probation hold for Mr. Meese. And the probation.
When you use the term arrest warrant, does he actually issue a warrant or just enter the house?
Mr. Meese was not arrested at home. Mr. Meese was arrested in a vehicle that day. But based on the probation agent's decision to issue an arrest warrant.
So much like a judge in Wisconsin.
Yes. Yes. But so he was arrested in a vehicle. But again, the anonymous informant said he's got guns, he's got drugs, this is where he lives with his girlfriend and the kids. So then the officers went and knocked on the door. And the problem with Mr. Meese's argument, though, is so the officers then went to the door, they knocked on the door, and the defendant's live-in girlfriend, the mother of two of his children, was at home, Jamie Lee. And she let the officers in, and she consented to a search, and two officers testified at the evidentiary hearing that when she was informed that Mr. Meese may have weapons in the home, her primary concern automatically was the safety of her children, and she did not want weapons in that home. So she allowed the officers upstairs, right where the anonymous tip said the guns would be, and she said, yes, you may search for the weapons. I don't want weapons in my home because of my children. So, yes, the officers then found the two handguns underneath the mattress in the bedroom he shared with his girlfriend, and they were on his side of the bed, according to her. When it came time for the evidentiary hearing and the motion to suppress, Ms. Lee submitted an affidavit, and she testified at the evidentiary hearing, I consented to a search in my home because the officers threatened to get a search warrant, and I had to leave to pick my children up from daycare. Ms. Lee never submitted in her affidavit or on the witness stand, never did she say, the only reason I consented to a search was because I learned of Mr. Meese's arrest. So there absolutely was no nexus. So, yes, his arrest was supported by reasonable suspicion, but even if we assume that it wasn't, does it really matter? No. I mean, the magistrate judge and the district court correctly concluded that there was absolutely no nexus between his arrest and Ms. Lee's decision to consent to a search of her home. She was afraid of weapons in the home around her children, and that's what drove her consent. So the search was completely based on that consent, and it was lawful, and so there wasn't any taint between Mr. Meese's arrest and that search. So again, the officers go in the home. They find the two handguns under a bedroom mattress. So when it came time to sentence Mr. Meese, the probation office recommended this four-level increase under Chapter 2 of the guidelines, contending that clearly he was possessing these two handguns in connection with the felony offense of narcotics distribution. He had $3,400 wrapped in a bag in the rafters of his basement, and they recovered it because then the canine, the... Okay. So, I mean, you've... Right. The dog climbed up, found it. So when you've got...
Very acrobatic dog, I
guess. Yes. So when you read the district court's findings at sentencing, they were not at all in error. She's like, look, you've got money, drug money, hidden in the rafters of your basement, evidence of narcotics trafficking in your home. Clearly you had these two weapons in your home in the event of a home invasion. She found that there was an increased risk of home invasions when people know you're dealing drugs. So I think that clearly...
And the ammunition in the wrong gun.
That doesn't mean he didn't possess them in connection with... That just means he wasn't careful when he loaded the one weapon. And one of the weapons also had an obliterated serial number. So I don't think that the district court's findings were at all in error with respect to that four-level increase. And then clearly the district court judge chose a sentence at the high end of the correctly calculated advisory guideline range, which I think this court can find, is entitled to that non-binding presumption of reasonableness. So I ask that you affirm Mr. Meese's judgment and conviction. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Rumbleau. Mr. Jones.
I only have two small points in response. First, the comment that this anonymous call had very specific and was involved a rich detail. That is just based on what the police officer is saying it was. There is nothing in there. So, there is no record of that for that conclusion. Also, this discussion about primary concern was the safety of the children. My recollection of the testimony is that the officer said we showed up and told Jamie Lee, hey, there's guns. We think they're up in the bedroom. If she wasn't concerned or if she wasn't affected by the fact that and we've arrested Adam Meese, she'd say, okay, thanks for the information. I'll go get them. I don't know that the decision to let these police into her officer had to have been affected in some way by the fact that the co-resident of that house, her live-in boyfriend and father of her children, had also been arrested. That's all I have.
All right. Thank you. Thanks to both counsel, Mr. Jones. An additional thanks to you for accepting the appointment and representing ably the cause of Mr. Meese.
My pleasure. Thank you.
All right. Case is taken under advisement.